We are doing Megillat Esther, and we're slowly proceeding through the Megillah. We had learned about how Esther was good-looking in every respect, be it her figure, the symmetry of her looks, be it her countenance. And we discussed how this reflects on the mitzvot, that this is really a description of the two aspects of beauty that the Jewish people have, be it the beauty of action, the chesed, be it the beauty of the mitzvot, the balanced life we're supposed to lead. And we discussed how in the eyes of the nations, they just saw the beauty, the external beauty, the beauty of the chesed that was in Esther, as we will see throughout the Megillah. And girl after girl is being brought to Ahasuerus, and after they're being brought after 12 months of being put in all kinds of oils to make their skin soft, to remove the hairs, to make them have a good smell. And after 12 months of preparation, they're brought for one night to Ahasuerus. And Chazal say, from this Russia, we could learn a good trait, we could learn Derech Eretz, that at least by day he was doing what a person is supposed to be doing by day. By day he was running the country, he was doing his business. It was only at night that he was with these girls. So Chazal say, at least a person should learn Derech Eretz from him, that the proper time for a person to be with his wife is at night. This is the Derech Eretz that we learn from him. And here we see another point that we find often in Chazal. When Chazal and the Torah tells bad things about a person, so Chazal, and also the Chazal probably learned it from the Torah, they're very honest. If there was something good about him, so Chazal say, look at this good thing that there is. We could learn something good about him. They didn't say, well, if he's bad, then everything's bad. It's all bad. Everything we could say bad about him must be bad. Chazal said, no, there's something good we could learn from Ahasuerus. At least he had the Derech Eretz that he was only with these girls by night. So that's at least something good we should learn from him. Chazal say that people had an issue with this. They tried to make takanot, especially people who had more time at home. So they'd, if a person's home and his wife is home, especially a young couple, and even if they're not a young couple, so nature takes its course. So Chazal tried to make institutions in Ezra's time, here, right after Ahasuerus, that after a person's with his wife, he can't pray, he can't make a blessing, can't do anything till he goes to the mikveh. And that institution didn't last. It didn't work. See, it didn't work. But we still see that the concept is a good kosher concept. The person is supposed to minimize and then leave it for the nighttime. And even that, he's supposed to do only... Is there a reason?
Just stop.
Well, is there a reason why...
Why nighttime is better?
Well, nighttime is a time when a person goes to sleep. It's natural for him to be in the bedroom. Nighttime is a time when a person is less productive. It's a time when a person finishes his day's work. That's the normal course of life. A person by day is supposed to be producing outside the house, and at night he is supposed to be inside the house. By the way, that's an important point for Shalom Bayis. People sometimes think, I'll just stay home. Usually being home too much isn't good for Shalom Bayis. Even the best couples don't get along too much if they're home too much time together. So it's important to get out of the house. So after Ahasuerus was with a girl, so then they had another house to keep this girl in, because Ahasuerus went with the laws, and this is also a halacha, that a girl who was once married to the king doesn't go and marry a regular person afterwards. So here, Ahasuerus wasn't really marrying them. He just took girl after girl every night. But nonetheless, he maintained this. He said, you can't go back to your houses. You can't go be with someone else. You guys got to stay in my harems. So, okay, that's what he did. And Ahasuerus kept the list. He'd have his little black book. About each girl, he'd write down his footnotes, and if he ever felt like he wanted someone else, he'd say, don't bring in a new girl. Let's go get that one again. Now, even when he was married to Vashti, he had his list of mistresses. And when came Esther's turn, so... Huh? The queen is the queen. She's his primary wife. When it came Esther's turn, so the Pasuk in Pasuk Tesvav, what they call the second chapter, the 15th verse, so We read it. Uvagiyato lester batavichayil dod Mordechai. Slowly. When we mention... We're Perek Beis Pasuk Tesvav. So when it came Esther's turn... we'll read other psukim. When it came Esther's turn, so the pasuk makes a point of telling us who did Esther come from? Who was her father? Who was her grandfather? The pasuk says, we say it in Shabbos, Tzidkatecha keharerei el mishpatecha tehom rabba. Tzidkatecha, Hashem, your righteousness is like those potent mountains, those huge, powerful mountains, and your justice goes down to the depths. Our sages say this is a reference to tzaddikim and rishayim. When Hashem tzidkatecha, when Hashem speaks about the tzaddikim, it's like the mountains. They have a history. You got to climb up to get to the tzaddik, the father, the grandfather. There's a lineage. He comes from somewhere. When Hashem tells us about tzaddikim, so he points out where they come from. So now we're about to see Esther and her righteousness. So it tells us when it came the turn of Esther, the daughter of Avichayil, etc. What? I don't know. I think so. You might not have noticed it. That's the trap. That's the tune. That's the tune that's written. So when came Esther's turn, we mention all of her history. We mention going back where she comes from. Esther doesn't want anything. And the pasuk, time and again, shows us that everything here is being done against her will. There's no room for someone to read the Megillah and think she wants this position. No. Pasuk even says, Vatilakach, twice it says it, and she was taken. She doesn't go, she's taken. And Esther has spent those 12 months in fear, in prayer, not to end up with this night. And this has affected her. We saw last time that Mordechai would go day after day to check out that Esther wasn't executed for being so anti. Esther was against all of this. He was worried, maybe she'll get killed. You know, she's there in a harem where that's what the whole goal is, who's going to be the queen? And she's there saying, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this. And he wanted to see her psychological well-being. That's what we discussed last time. And it affected her. Chazal say, Esther yirakroket haita. After 12 months being in the harem, Esther walked towards the king. The Chazal say she was green. The idea isn't necessarily that her skin color was green, but she looked like a depressed human being. Esther was wiped. She had spent 12 months in trepidation from this night. Now, let's remember who Esther is. Esther is a Nevi'ah. Esther is a prophetess. She's not just a simple girl. She's a great-great-great-granddaughter of Sarah, and she's a girl that lived her whole life in purity, and she's worked on her traits to perfect them, and now she's worked to the level that we're going to see God speaks to her. That means she's perfected her traits to that level, and now she knows the stories about her great-great-grandmother Sarah, who was abducted for a night, and how God came and rescued her. She knows what it says in the Torah about Rebekah. And now she is being abducted, and she has no promise. She has her uncle Mordechai outside praying. She on the inside is praying. And the time has come that they're taking her. Vatehi Esther noset chen. And whoever saw Esther thought, wow, what a nice girl. Esther wasn't interested in being nice to anyone at that moment. Esther wasn't interested in being there at that moment. She wasn't trying to make a good impression. She didn't ask for any perfume or any entertainment to come along with her because she wasn't interested in being chosen as queen. And she is brought to Ahasuerus' palace, the pasuk stresses, on the 10th month, the month of Teves. We just left that 2 months ago, the month when the nights are longest, when it's cold. Chazal say Hashem positioned it to that month, when a person in the cold is more fond of having the body heat of being with someone else. On the long nights when Ahasuerus would have plenty of time to be with her, which is what gets his servants upset. And she's brought in the 7th year, the pasuk stresses, to point out to us that the righteousness of Esther, that Esther had spent 3 years in hiding. She was only abducted in his sixth year. Remember, every girl spent 12 months in the oils. So she was abducted in the sixth year. Ahasuerus killed his first wife, Vashti. When was the party? 3 years into his reign. So 3 years into his reign, he starts his pageant, collecting girls. He spends 3 years testing out all the girls. After 3 years, he sets out a decree. You know what? There must be girls in hiding. If anyone's in hiding, she's going to get killed. And then they find Esther, because Mordechai can't hide her anymore. They find Esther. Esther spends the next year in his harem. And then on the seventh year of his reign, Esther is taken in. So 3 years she spent in hiding. 3 years she spends in some kind of cellar because she doesn't want to be at this night. Yeah. The guys voted not to do it. Ah, we'll try. You're right. We'll try to get back to that. Mishpatecha Tom Rabba. When Hashem does punishment to the Roshaim, then Hashem just mentions his name and zap what Hashem's punishment is. That's what the Medrash says. Tzidketcha, the tzaddikim are kareel, like a mountain that has a foundation that takes you up. When Hashem does the mishpatecha, the punishment of the Roshaim, so then we go to the opposite extreme. It's not even like flat lands. It's like a deep, deep pit. Well, I think the idea is also, if the mountain represents having a lineage that builds up to it, so the pit is the opposite extreme. So that's what the Medrash says, that they're shown. When Hashem punishes them, Hashem doesn't mention not where it comes from, nothing, just the punishment. I expect a question from you, Dani. Let's continue. Wait. We have a whole Megillah to go. By the end of the Megillah, he'll have a question. Yeah. So Esther, when Ahasuerus sees her, he likes her better than all the virgins. He likes her better than all his mistresses. And he's so excited, he's not interested in comparing her to anyone. Right away, he gives her the crown, and he makes her queen. And he says, Esther, where are you from? I don't know. Where are your parents? I don't know. Ah, you grew up like an orphan on the streets? Yeah.
I think she probably said it in a way that women are just so good at distracting men from questions.
So even though Esther was telling him that she doesn't know where she came from, even so, vayamlicheha tachat Vashti. He made her queen, and he considered her instead of Vashti. Here he had married Vashti, his first wife, was a princess, the granddaughter of kings. Now he's marrying Esther, who's telling him the story that she's an orphan off the streets. And he's trying to figure out, tell me, you don't remember anything, what neighborhood, what people. He's going to spend the next few years questioning her about this. But in his eyes, she's instead of Vashti. Now, we've had a request to lane with the Tamim. I cannot guarantee you that the tamim are exact, because I'm reading here without tamim, so I'm doing it by heart, so I might be a little off. That's okay. Vayas ha-melech mishte gadol lechol tzarav v'avadav et mishte Esther. The king made a great feast. What was great about it? Wait a second. We started the Megillah with a great feast, 180 days. Now, it's not. As many days. He doesn't invite all his nobles. But in his eyes, it was a greater feast. He calls it Mishte Gadol. Because in his eyes, this was the feast in honor of Esther. So this feast in his eyes was even bigger. Chazal say, he set up her statue all over instead of Vashti's statue. Now everyone saw the beauty of Esther. He put up her picture in his bedroom. So he makes a great feast for all his servants. And he gave a reduction in taxes, a tax break. He says, I don't know what nation my wife is from, so I'll give everyone a tax break. And he's saying, maybe she's from this nation, maybe that nation. And then he sends gifts, not simple gifts. He sends them special Christmas gifts. These are gifts in honor of my new Queen Esther. Now, Chazal say that he figured out that she's tricking him. Like, Yechezkel correctly pointed out, he thought, nah, maybe she knows more than she's letting on. So he says, how do I entice her to tell me where she's from? He shows her, look, I'll give everyone a tax break. If only I knew who your nation was, I'd give them a much bigger tax break. If only I knew who your nation was, I'd give them much bigger gifts. Doesn't work. וביקבץ בתולות שנית ומודחי יושב בשער המלך. They gathered the virgins a second time. The simple understanding is, Esther tells Ahasuerus, look, you love me, you married me. Let these girls go home. Let them go to their families. So at Esther's bequest, he gathers the virgins and sends them home. He gathers them a second time to send them home. And Mordechai, what honor could he give the Jewish people? So he gives them the honor that Mordechai gets promoted. He sits at the king's gates. Chazal tell us there's another understanding here. That he turned to his advisor, his rabbi. He says, Mordechai, tell me, what do I do to get her to tell? She's not telling. I want to know what nation she's from. Mordechai says, "Eni shamit kanala biyarech haverta." A woman, the thing she's most jealous of is another woman. If you let her think that there's going to be competition, that you're bringing in other girls, then maybe she'll give in. Now, Mordechai knows Esther wishes she wasn't queen. Mordechai tells Esther, you should know, if God put you in this position, there's a reason why you're here. Ultimately, there will be a salvation coming from you. If God made such a great tzaddik as stuck in such a situation, something will come of it. We know the salvation of the story of Esther. We should also know that Esther's son from Ahasuerus, Koresh, she told him, son, you know, you're Jewish. So he said, yeah, I know, that's okay. I'm Persian, I'm the king. She tells him, you know what, but later when Ahasuerus dies, she sits next to him, and there's going to be a messenger coming from Israel begging to rebuild the temple. And Esther's going to tell him, son, you do this. This is a big thing. You could rebuild the temple. So Koresh gives an order. He says, here, take all the gold, take all the silver. I'll give you whatever you need. Give me a list. Give me how many raw materials you need, and I'm sending it. And he sends word, and they do rebuild the temple. So two things happened from the fact that Esther was queen. We have, firstly, we have the whole story of Purim, but we also have the rebuilding of the second temple. That was at Esther's, she tells her son, hey, listen. At least this you should do. You know, you don't go to shul Shabbos morning. You don't. At least this. So Esther couldn't have had too much nachas from this boy Koresh, but at least this nachas she had. The boy did rebuild the second temple. So Esther is there, and Ahasuerus is trying to figure out what nation she's from. In Esther. In Esther. Magidit moladita vetama. Kasher tzivale Mordechai. Esther does not reveal where she's from, nor her nation, because Mordechai said so. Esther knows that the Jewish people are suffering. And Esther knows that their financial situation is not good. And so Esther is enticed to reveal. Maybe I should tell him. He'll make it good for the Jews. But Mordechai said no. So she listens. She listens to Mordechai just as when she was his adopted daughter. And this is exceptional tzidkus on behalf of Esther. Esther could have said, you know, you were my rabbi when I was at home. Now I'm in a different place. I'm a queen. You don't understand the challenges I face. Over here, I'm with the king. It's pressure. Do I know when he'll get upset at me? You know, I'm risking my life. He's telling me to tell, and I'm making believe I don't know. Who knows what it could lead to? No. Esther says, this is what he said. I'm listening. And she does, and this will prove to be at the core of the ultimate salvation, the fact that she does not reveal. She says, fine, Mordechai told me not to, I'm going to listen. And she does. And that's we all know the continuation of the story. So the Gemara says, yeah. בימים הרים ומרדכי יושב בשער המלך קצף בקטן ותרש שני סריסי המלך משומרי הסף ויבקשו לשלוח יד במלך אחשוורוש. In those days, Ahasuerus had three guards in front of his doors at night. They'd have three shifts. And two of them were pretty fed up. You know, these long nights, he has a new wife. He spends half the night awake with her. And he keeps asking us, bring me a drink, bring me a drink, I'm thirsty. We don't have a minute to sit down. We're on our feet all the time working, ever since she got here. He's so in love with her. This is crazy. We can't do this. We have to bump him off. So Big Son and Zeresh.
Why didn't they think of killing the
They thought of killing her too. Don't worry. They decide we have to bump him off. So one tells the other, you know, by the time we get the poison ready, we have two shifts. If I'm while I'm at my shift, I can't leave for a long enough time to prepare the poison. So he says, you know what, I'll cover your shift and you go prepare the poison and bring it while I'm covering your shift. ויבדה דבר למרדכי, ויגד לאסתר המלכה, ותאמר אסתר למלך בשם מרדכי. Mordechai is sitting next to them. He happens to be sitting next to them as they're conversing about the plot. And they assume, what does this Jew know? We're talking Persian. He doesn't understand. There's Shnei Talsiim, the Gemara says. They spoke a foreign language. And they didn't know that one of the laws that we have is that the high court cannot accept testimony through a translator. They have to at least understand the testimony. They don't have to be well-versed to speak it, but they have to be able to hear it. The person who's giving testimony, if he's talking a foreign language, they have to be able to understand it. So the people who were on the high Jewish court, they spoke all 70 languages, and Mordechai was one of them. So Mordechai overhears the conversation, and he understands every word. So Mordechai tells Esther. And Esther tells the queen, and she says, you know, I heard it from Mordechai. You have this guy sitting at the gates, Mordechai? He told me. So Ahasuerus hears, that night they're plotting to kill him, and they're going to change the guards. So he has his secret service come in and check, and they see that when it's time for the shift, the guards to change, so they don't change. They see that one of the guards is doing double duty. And when they verify, they see that this is really what was going on. So they hang them both on a tree. And it was written in the history books, but not in the history books that are in the storage houses. There was another miracle here. The king said, I want this written in my history books right here, next to where I sit. I want a record of what happened here. And that was unusual. Now we're up to what's called the third chapter. After these things, notice that we had an Achar Devarim Eile before. After Vashti was killed, we're setting the stage. And then after Esther was appointed queen, we're setting the stage. Who was the one who advised Achshersh to kill his first wife? Haman. What other advice did Haman give him? He said, you should be able to kill anyone at whim. You don't have to ask us what we think are your officers. You don't have to be bound by this law. Let's make a new rule. You, Ahasuerus, could kill anyone who you see fit. If someone upsets you like Vashti, you could decide to kill her. And in doing this, Haman really set the stage for the ultimate redemption of the Jewish people. Because in Haman saying to bump off Vashti, Esther was placed in the correct position. In Haman saying you could kill at whim, so now Haman could be killed. Now that the stage is set, that Hashem could save the Jewish people, Hashem set up the refuah, the cure, then Hashem comes and brings the makah, the punishment. Hashem always prepares the cure before the punishment. So now, אחר הדברים האלה גידל המלך אחשוורוש את המן בן המדת הגגי וינשאו. After this, the king tells Haman, look, you gave me this power that I could kill at whim. You, Haman, you deserve a prize for everything you've done. I'm going to bring you up now. You're going to be bigger than all the other office servants. You're going to be in charge over here. Vayasem et kiso me'al kol ha'sarim asher ito. And he put his position, his chair, was above the chair of all the other officers. וכל עבדי המלך אשר בשער המלך קוראים ומשתחווים להמן. All the servants, be it the slaves, be it those that are בשער המלך, everyone around the castle, whenever they'd see Haman, they'd bow to him. כי כן ציווה לו המלך. That's what the king demanded. The king said, everyone has to bow to him. That's the love the king wants to show to Haman. Haman gave him this power that he could kill at whim. So now that he has this power, Haman isn't a threat. He could pick up Haman. But Mordechai refuses. He will not bow. Haman has declared himself an idol. Haman has declared himself a god. And once Haman declares that, Mordechai will not bow. If it's a question of honor, so we find our sages did bow before kings. If it's a question of bowing to a person that declares himself a god, Mordechai refuses. That's a biblical prohibition.
Ahasuerus declared himself a god. That's why
Ahasuerus did not. Haman declared himself a god.
Okay, that was my question. Because I know that the brothers bowed to Yosef. So
right.
When someone declares themselves a god, is that the same thing with Pharaoh then?
Right.
Would that but did Moshe ever bow to Pharaoh?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Huh?
Would that Ahasuerus didn't have a problem?
I don't know, it's a good question. There is a medrash that says that Haman hung an idol around his neck. He wore a necklace with an idol. But the Gemara says that he made himself into an idol.
Yeah, I've read that also about the idol.
I don't know why Ahasuerus didn't have an issue with that. I don't know. So the king's slaves and those that are his nobles that are at the gates, they all tell Mordechai, why are you transgressing what the king commanded? What are you gaining by it? What do you care? Anyways, he's the top officer. Why are you refusing to bow? Day after day, they're telling him, Mordechai, you're here, you're part of the palace. Everyone's bowing. Why don't you bow? He refuses. They tell Haman, they wanted to see. Well, Mordechai stick to his words, because Mordechai told them he was a Yehudi. What is a Yehudi? We said Yehudi is monotheist. Yehudi is Yud Kei Vav Kei. Yehudi is one who refuses to bow to idols, a monotheist. So Mordechai said, I can't bow to him. He made himself an idol. They said, oh, really? If it cost you your life, would you bow? No, I can't. I'm not allowed to bow. So they said, okay, let's see. So they tell Haman, Vayal Haman, ki ein Mordechai, korea umishtachaveh lo. Haman sees that he refuses to bow. Haman says, maybe he thinks I don't notice. So Haman walks straight up to Mordechai and stands in front of him. Mordechai looks at him and no can do. Then Haman gets really upset. Haman got filled with internal anger. Everyone sees Mordechai is not bowing. He said, but I should just kill Mordechai. That's not such a big deal. He didn't bow. I'll kill him. Ki gidulo etam Mordechai. Because they told him what nation Mordechai comes from. They told him, you know why he doesn't bow to you? Because he's a Jew. As a Jew, he won't bow to you. Ah, it's because he's Jewish. I hate the Jews. I'm going to kill all the Jews. Yes. What's your question, Yechezkel? Vayvakesh Haman lashmid et kol hayudim asher b'chol malchut Achashverosh am Mordechai. Haman wanted lashmid. What's shmad? Shmad is to destroy a religion. Whenever we say there's a gzeras shmad, shmad is a decree to abolish the Jewish religion. It's not to abolish life. Haman wanted to abolish monotheism, to abolish Judaism, and that was his goal. Lashmid et hayudim. It doesn't say lahog. Haman wanted lashmid. He says, they're the nation of Mordechai, and they're the ones that refuse to bow to me, so then I want to destroy all of them. Now notice, it doesn't say that Ahasuerus allowed him to have everyone bow to him, just within the palace. But Mordechai was sitting at the palace gates, and everyone else around the palace was bowing to Haman. Around the palace, the king is confident. Everyone knows I'm king. It's okay if everyone around here bows to him. They know I'm the king. Outside, it is a different story. Now, not everyone agrees to what I just said, but we're going with one pshat here. And that's a rule in general. Whatever I say, I'm usually, I don't bother saying this is this opinion or that opinion or the third opinion.
When you say Lashmid and Laharog, which way Lashmid just like?
Lashmid is to force conversion.
Kill?
No, we'll see. There's Lashmid Vilaharog. Later on, the decree will be
assassin,
to.
And that's what it comes from.
I would say today,
Lashmid.
we're going to see that Haman's decree was Lashmit, Velaharog, Ulaabed, all three. But so why do we have three terms? Because they're three different terms. Lashmit is to get them to leave their faith. בחודש הראשון הוא חודש ניסן בשנת 12 למלך אחשוורוש הפיל פור הוא הגורל לפני המן. On the first month, the month of Nisan, 12 years into Achashverosh's reign, Esther has been suffering for 5 years now. Esther has been Achashverosh's wife for 5 years. 5 years have passed since Esther became queen. For 5 years, he does not yet know where she comes from. And for 5 years, she is under the claws of the king Achashverosh. And now, Haman draws the lot, and the Pasuk has to explain to us that Pur is a Goral, because Pur is not the language we would use, but here the Pesukim are really setting us up to know where does the word Purim come from. So he's drawing lots, and he draws lots to the days of the month, and then he draws lots to which month, and then he comes to the conclusion it'll be the month, the 13th of the month of Adar. Lifnei Haman, the lots are to check out Haman's mazel, because if anyone tries to check out the Jewish people's mazel, it won't work. Because based on the mazalot, if you want to check the constellations in heaven, if you really know what they say, then they don't speak about the Jewish people. We don't exist. We shouldn't have existed to begin with. Avram couldn't have kids. He was infertile. He couldn't have kids. Sarah couldn't have kids. God says, yes, I'm going to take you out of the constellations. But in the constellations, if you read the constellations correctly, it doesn't say that the Jewish people exist, because we don't. We shouldn't have existed.
Okay, but based on that theory, we have a problem. Because Potiphar's wife, they said, saw that she would somehow be connected to Israel. That's why she thought she had to seduce Joseph when it was us not. So she saw Israel. What's up?
Good question. There's a difference between speaking about individuals and the klal. Let's wait a minute, and we'll get to that. Haman verifies when is his mazel strongest. He checks out hu hagoral lifnei Haman. He wants to see, when am I, Haman, strongest by the constellations? When do I have the best chance to succeed? And he verifies that the 13th of Adar is the time. The Jewish people as a people, there are two types of mazalot. There's mazal for an individual, and there's mazal for a group. And why is it that if there's a by the same token, there's a decree for an individual, there's a decree for a group. Sometimes if there's a gzeirah, or it seems that a whole city is going to be wiped out, we find people running. Why do they run? If you believe, so whatever's supposed to happen will happen. So the answer is no. Sometimes the mazel of this place says that this place is going to be wiped off the map. The question is, will I be there or not? That's up to me. The mazel of a group can overcome the mazel of an individual. The Jewish people as a group do not have mazel. En mazal li'Yisrael. Answer your question? Okay. מיום ליום ומחודש לחודש שנים עשר הוא חודש אדר. He checks out the days, he checks out the month, comes out the 13th of the month of Adar. We all know he was very happy. He said the month of Adar is when Moshe Rabbeinu died. The Jews are going to be weaker that month, and he didn't know that the month of Adar is when Moshe Rabbeinu was born. Moshe Rabbeinu was born and died on the same day. That's what Hashem does with tzaddikim. He lets them lead a full life down to the day. ויאמר המן למלך אחשוורוש. ישנו עם אחד מפוזר ומפורד בין עמים בכל מדינות מלכותך. המן comes to אחשוורוש and says, you know, there is a nation. They're scattered among the nations. They're not even one place. They don't even marry into the nation. They're miforad. They keep themselves separate. They don't intermarry. Bechol medinot malchutecha. Throughout your kingdom, you control all of them. Vedateihem shonot mikolam. Their religions are different. Their religion is different than anyone else. And that's why everyone hates them. No one cares about them. They don't go by your laws. They don't pay your taxes. They're always taking off days. You don't gain anything by leaving them around. He says, you know, if it makes sense to you, I think it's a good idea to wipe them out. Haman doesn't say, I want to kill them. Haman says, Achashverosh, look, I'm your top advisor. I'm your top officer. I've been looking over the country, and it seems like a good idea to take this nation, wipe them out. He says, and we'll gather, we'll benefit by wiping them out. They're such a troublesome people. We'll get rid of them, and we'll raise we'll collect from their loot. We'll have 10,000 bars of silver. And I'll take them to the workers to make coins out of them. You'll make a lot of money. So the king says, Haman, you think it's good advice? Fine. Takes the ring off his hand. Achashverosh gives it to Haman ben Hamdasa, who comes from Agog, that's the root of this problem, who hates the Jews. Because Haman never told Achashverosh who the nation was. Haman, in his whole conversation with Achashverosh, he doesn't tell him which nation he's about to kill. He tells him there is a nation. So the king tells Haman, "Hakesef natun lach, keep the money. Lasot bo katov beinecha, and you take care of the nation the way makes sense to you. You're my top officer. I trust you. You're saying it's a good idea. You do what makes sense to you." Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes in Tanakh we find lach to men, but very often Chazal do darshan it. Chazal tells there's a deeper meaning over here. I don't know if there is such a drasha. Chazal tell us that Haman and Achashverosh both hated the Jews. It's like a guy who has a mound of dirt in his yard and his neighbor has a pit in his yard. So the guy who has a pit tells the guy who has the mound of dirt, you know, can I buy that dirt off of you to fill my pit? And he says, no, you don't have to pay me for it. I'm happy to get it off my yard. So Chazal say that Achashverosh was happy to bump off the Jews. He said, keep your money. I don't need it. I'm happy. You take care of them. But Pashup Shan the Psukim is the way we just read, that Achashverosh never heard it was the Jewish people. You see specifically from the wording of Haman, Haman doesn't tell him who the nation is. He doesn't tell him I'm for it. He says, I think it's good advice. What do you think? Achashverosh says, Haman, here's my ring. You write a decree the way it makes sense to you. I'm trusting you to take care of my kingdom. So they gather the scribes and they write what Haman commands to the Achashdalpanim. And these Achashdalpanim are responsible to spread the king's decree. Pasuk Yud Gimel, V'nishloach sifarim b'yad aratzim el kol medinot ha-melech. And now they're sending the decree to through the runners throughout the king's different cities and states. Yeah. Yep, but I have nothing to say about it, so we'll continue. Everything to say about it we said in previous Pesukim. Lashmid, larog, ulabed et kol ha-yudim, minahar ve'ad zaken, taf ve'nashim biyom echad, bishlosha asar, lechodesh shneim asar, uchodesh adar, ushlalam lavoz. We just finished Pesuk Yud Gimel. So he sent word, lashmid, larog, ulabed. We have here a few terms. Lashmid, to destroy their religion. Larog, to kill. Labed, to wipe out. Now, Lashmid corresponds to the neshama, to uproot the mitzvot. Larog is to take life out of them. Leabed is to burn the bodies. Don't leave anything, any reminder of the Jewish people. Completely destroy them. After you kill, burn the bodies. Leave nothing behind. It's a good question. It would seem that initially when Haman saw Mordechai, he only wanted Lashmit. And then as the enmity boiled within him, and he saw he could get away with it, so he moved it up a notch. Ushlalam lavoz, and take all their wealth. Now, the idea is, take all their wealth, and they will be moche et zecher Yisrael. Right? What does Amalek want to do? Wipe out the remembrance that there was ever such a thing as a Jewish people. Let's just not only kill, not only men, women, and children, but let's burn the bodies. Let's make sure there's no evidence that these people ever existed. And corresponding to these four aspects of Lashmid, Larog, Ulabed, we have on Purim four mitzvot. We have the reading of the Megillah. We have one more mitzvah. He wanted Lashmid, take away all their mitzvahs, remove their religion. We have a mitzvah. We added a mitzvah. We read the Megillah. He wanted to remove the neshama. He wanted to take our soul, the mitzvot. So we add to the neshama. He wanted to take our lives. So then we have a mitzvah to have more life. What is representation of life? Happiness. Sadness is a representation of death. Happiness is a representation of life. So for our, he wanted to take our lives, we add to the living. We're happy. The month of Adar, we're happy on Purim. He wanted to take the bodies, so we have a mitzvah to make the body happy. We do something physical, we drink wine. He wanted to take our wealth, so we have a mitzvah to help everyone out with their wealth. We have a special mitzvah of giving matanot le'evyonim, helping out the poor. The concept of mishloach manot, by the way, goes hand in hand with the suda, mishloach manot. Haman says, kill them all on one day, biyom echad, and only after that could you take the loot. He wants to make sure they're focused on the killing. We got to wipe them all out. So he, part of the decree is on that day you can't touch their loot. Patshegen haketav, leinat endat bechol medina umdina, galoi lechol amim, liot atidim layom azeim. Now, he was worried that if he writes an open letter, so then the Jews would get their politicians to work on annulling the decree. On the other hand, he needed to write it in a way that the people would know in all the different territories. So he wrote to the leading officers, to the governors, he said, you have to ensure that on this day we wipe out the Jews. But Patshegen Aktav, he says, but when do you tell everyone the decree of killing the Jews? Leave it under wraps till the day comes. You'll set everyone up, you'll tell them on this day everyone has to take off from work. On the 13th of Adar we have news to tell you. But don't tell them what it is. Because Haman was worried if they know a year in advance, then the Jews will get together their politicians and then they'll get Ahasuerus to annul the decree. Even though technically in Persia and Mede you could not annul a decree, but there were other ways to get around it, as we see later in the Megillah. So he tells the leading officers, you guys, this is the plan. But keep it under wraps. Tell the people on the 13th of Adar next year they have to take off from work. That's a day we have a special plan for them. Haratzim. Now, if you think about it, this is also part of the miracle. Meaning, had it been an open letter, the nations might have made a program right away. Why should they wait for the 13th? If the king doesn't like the Jews, he wants us to kill them anyways, what's he going to care if we do it today or we wait a year? And Chazal question, how come the people really waited? Why didn't they kill the Jews right away? So Pashup Shad is Pachegan Aktav. Leinat in dat bechol mdina umdina. He wrote it that ultimately they'll make it known in the different cities. But Chazal have a different pshat. Chazal say that because he initially was such a fool, he sent out letters to everyone. Everyone has to be the boss in their house. The wife has to listen to your husband. Everyone looked at it and said, of course my wife listens to me, otherwise I smack her up. In those days, people were brutes. So they looked at it and they said, what kind of bum is this? He has to tell us we have to be bosses in our house. What wife dares talk back to her husband? Only Vashti, of course, spoke back to Ahasuerus. And you see what he did there. You see what life was about in those days. So when they read that, they said, this guy's a fool. We can't take him seriously. So when he sent the next letter, 12 years later, and he writes in that letter, ultimately I'm going to let you kill the Jews, they read it and they said, huh, He killed his wife in a day. He changed his mind. So maybe he'll change his mind on this too. We better hold our horses and wait and see if he changes his mind. And they weren't too surprised when he changed his mind and made a decree the exact opposite. So that's how Chazal explained why the people didn't make a pogrom right away. So Haman writes up this decree. Haratzim yatzu dechufim bidvar ha-melech. The melech said, go out quickly. And the horsemen ride out quickly. V'adat nitena b'shushan ha-bira. V'amelech v'aman yashavu lishtot. V'ahir shushan nahavocha. The city of Shushan was wondering, what's going on? Navocha, what's this mysterious decree on the 13th? We have to be prepared for what? The runners are running out, and there's a special decree, and the whole city's talking, what's happening? What's going to be? What do we have to wait for another year's time and in the 13th of Adar, 11 months away? Umodechai. Mordechai knew what happened, and he also knew he was responsible. He knew this all stemmed from the fact that he wouldn't bow. Mordechai tore his clothes. He wore sack and ash. Vayetze b'toch ha'ir, vayizak, zaka gedola, umara. He wailed a great wail, great over this terrible decree on the Jewish people, and a bitter wail. He was embittered that all this stemmed from him. He did what was right, but how could it be that he caused all of this to happen? Vayavo ad lifnei shaar ha-melech ki ein lavo el shaar ha-melech bivush sak. He came just before the gates, but he couldn't come into the gates because he was wearing sackcloth. You don't enter the king's gates that way. Ubchol medina umdina mekom asher dvar ha-melech v'dato magia. When the letter came, and those officers, those politicians that had good friends that were Jews, they called them in and they said, you know what's about to happen? They're planning a massive pogrom in a year's time. You guys have to figure something out. So even though Haman thought we'd keep it under wraps, only the top officers would know, he didn't know that all the top officers, well, many of them had good friends. So they called in their Jewish friends, and they tell them, hey guys, you know, they're planning a pogrom in 11 months. Evel gadol la'yehudim. Now you can understand that the Jews weren't about to tell their neighbors this is the plan, but the Jews were all in mourning. It was as though someone was dead. They saw the king's decree. V'tzom uvchi umisped. Tzom, they all gathered. Uvchi, and they wept. Umisped, they eulogized. Sakva efel yutza l'arabim. These are the five elements of tshuva. Sakva efel, the sack and the ash, is for the leaders. And here, l'arabim, doesn't mean necessarily the masses. It could mean la rabim, like the great ones. Esther hears, she gets very scared. Huh? Yeah. Huh? Sarisa, Pashup Shad, are her eunuchs. A servant or a eunuch, right? We brought a machlokas rishonim, yeah? If it's liberalis and eunuch. Yeah, Pasha Pshad is male, yeah. So Esther calls her the lads and the sarisim, the girls, yeah. Narot are the girls. Narot are the girls. Achshverosh wasn't worried about what would happen with the girls, he was worried about what would happen with the men, so he castrated them. They were eunuchs. Whoever served in the king's palace were eunuchs. So They all come, her servants, and they tell her that Mordechai is out there in mourning in sackcloth. Esther sends him clothing. She figures, look, take off your sack for a few minutes. Come in, explain to me what's going on. And Mordechai refuses, not even for a minute. He can't part with his mourning. And Esther calls Hasach, and she figures it must be something secret. So she calls Hasach, her trusted servant, and she tells him, you go talk to Mordechai, ask him what's going on. So she wanted to know what are we doing, what's happening, and what caused this to happen. Ladat maze ve'al maze. What's happening and what caused it? Hasach goes out to Mordechai. And Mordechai is out by the streets. And here we see that Mordechai wasn't embarrassed to stand before the king's palace and yell. Sometimes people think, I can't protest. What, I'm going to stand and yell? I should protest in front of the embassy. If I have to protest in front of Bush or someone else, what should I? That's beneath my dignity. Mordechai said, it's not beneath my dignity. I have to wail. When it hurts, you cry. So Mordechai is out in the main street, and he's wailing. And Mordechai tells him what happens. He tells him, yeah, I refused to bow to Haman, and that's how the whole thing evolved. And he told him, also tell Haman that when Ahasuerus heard the decree, it didn't say it was about the Jews. All the decree said is that there's going to be a day of gatherings. I'm telling you, you tell Esther it's about the Jews. That's the plan. They're going to do a massive program on that day.
Can we read this picture?
We're just short on time. I don't think we could afford to. We're almost finished with time. We're not finished with the Megillah. So he knew that she was a big tzaddikis. And she does not want to go to Ahasuerus more times than she has to. So, therefore, he told Hasach, you tell her I said she has to go to Ahasuerus. They're married already 5 years. For 5 years, Esther never sets foot in his chambers unless he demands it. So, now, at the point has come, Mordechai tells her, you have to go, you have no choice. Chazal tell us that up until that point, Esther was not prohibited from going back to Mordechai. Because until that point, really everything was done against Esther's better judgment, against Esther's will. It was at this moment where Esther would be willingly walking into Ahasuerus' chambers that Esther would become prohibited from going back to her first husband, Chazal tells, her first husband, which was Mordechai.
Why?
And that's a good question. Why? That deserves its own shiur. We can't spend time on that today. So Esther, she tells Mordechai, you know, if I'm supposed to save the Jewish people, everyone knows that if you go in without being invited, then the law is that you get killed. You can't just walk in. And I haven't been called for 30 days. I have no idea how upset he is at me or whether he'll be happy if I come or not. And Mordechai tells Hasach, you go tell Esther that there's got to be a reason why she's in this position. And if she's being placed in that position, must be that Hashem wanted her to do something good about it. Chazal say there are two people who were given signs that they were destined for greatness. One was David HaMelech. David HaMelech was once watching the sheep, and a bear came to take one of the sheep. David HaMelech ran up, smacked the bear, took the sheep away. And then he looked at himself and said, what came over me? What's going on here? And the same thing happened with a lion once. A lion came to take one of the sheep. David HaMelech ran, smacked the lion, took the sheep away. So David HaMelech then asked himself, wait a second, what came over me? And then he realized God had showed him that he has exceptional strength to show him that there will come a time when he'll have to have the bravery to use it, which is what he did. When came time to fight Goliath, that's what David HaMelech tells Shaul. He says, God showed me when I took on a bear, I took on a lion, and I won. God showed me that I have the capacity to do this. The next one that had this revelation that he was destined for greatness was Mordechai and Esther. When Mordechai saw Esther taken to this Rasha, taken to Ahasuerus' chambers, Mordechai recognized this wouldn't be happening unless God has a plan. She's such a tzaddikis. She's so pure. If she was taken in, he has hundreds of girls. By the time she was taken in, he had interviewed over 1,000 girls. and he chooses her, and she's not even so good looking. What's happening with Esther? She's totally depressed. It's against all odds. She was good looking before. She spent a year in mourning over what was about to happen. At the end of that year, she was ready. She looked emaciated. She was depressed. And God made her look nice in Achashverosh's eyes. Bottom line, she was taken. So Mordechai tells Esther, "Mi yoten neit kazot higata malchut." Maybe this is your moment. This is the moment that you were put down on planet Earth for. And here we have to stop and recognize the deep message here. Very often we're put in a situation of a test, and we tell ourselves, how could I stand up to this test? And the key to standing up to the test is sometimes reminding ourselves, could be the whole reason I was brought to this planet is for this moment. If I'll stand up to this test, my whole life was worthwhile. And if I fail here, well, I failed on life. And that's what Mordechai tells Esther. He tells her, this is the challenge of your life. Will you stand up to it or will you fall? Rav Zelig Pliskin writes in his book, when a person has a hard time keeping mitzvot, he sometimes has to encourage himself. One of the ways a person can encourage himself is to think, you know, when a guy finishes an Olympic feat, so he gets the gold medal, you could have a crowd of thousands of people standing on their feet, giving him a standing ovation. A person has to sometimes think to himself, when I'm going to stand up to this mitzvah, you know what kind of standing ovation I'm going to get? He has to imagine, as though the crowds are roaring in honor of the fact that he did the mitzvah, and really they are. So this, we have to learn chinuchit from this point. That Mordechai tells Esther, "Umi yodem leit kazot higat lamalchut." Maybe this was the whole point. For 5 years you've been suffering under Achashverosh. Maybe the whole point was this moment. Now you have to stand up to it. Esther tells Mordechai, "Okay, I'll go. But you have to gather the Jewish people and fast over me. 3 days and three nights. Don't eat, don't drink, get together. I know Pesach is among these 3 days. Pesach is going to be one of the days that you have to fast and pray that I succeed." And they do. They do pray. Mordechai gathers the Jewish people. He declares a day of fast in Shushan, 3 days of fast. And everyone gets together to fast. And Esther and her girls, they also get together in prayer in preparation for the third day. Bezat Hashem, this is where we'll pick up. The signs will be posted. I don't know. You know what? Let's begin. Vayhi vayom hashlishi. The third day comes. And Esther tells him, you know, I lost my parents, and the only family I have is you. And you took me in, you married me, and we both know that if I go to Achashverosh now, never again will we be able to get together. And Mordechai tells her, okay, we'll fast, we'll pray, but you have to go. So Esther says, okay, I'll go. V'chasher avadti, we read it with a special tune. V'chasher avadti, avadti. Just as I was lost, I lost the rest of the family. I've just lost you. And after the 3 days preparation, v'hi b'yom hashlishi, v'tilbash Esther malchut. Esther dons royalty. What royalty does she don? Chazal tell us the Shekhinah rests upon her. She feels that God is with her. And she goes...
Doesn't it mean she dressed in her royal robes?
Excellent, you're right. And she goes and she heads towards Achashverosh's chamber. And she's standing in the pathway before the chamber. And suddenly she feels that Hashem has left her. And she pauses, she stops. Wait a second. The chief rabbi of Israel told me I have to go. Why does Hashem leave me? And at that moment, she starts composing, Eli, Eli, lama azavtani. My God, why have you left me? How could it be? I'm going to save the Jewish people. Now you leave me? Now's the time I need you most.